If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Welcome to this episode of the award-winning Best of the Left podcast. This is a sample of our recent bonus episode. Every couple of weeks or so, our crew of researchers, Amanda and myself, get together for a roundtable discussion. So here's a few minutes for free so you can see what all the fuss is about. I've also been wondering if eugenics attracts sociopaths, or if eugenics turns people into sociopaths. And I think I'm leaning towards the latter. I think that eugenics turns people into sociopaths because a lot of people with a lot of good ideas turned to eugenics and thought, like, this is a pretty good idea based on the information they had at the time. The most recent devastating example was W.E.B. Du Bois turns to eugenics.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you were going to say John Muir. And
no, I mean, yeah, John Muir. It's another devastating example, but we knew that years ago. But yeah, Du Bois, I just learned today. I was like, oh, like, that's terrible, but also not that surprising because so many people were into it. But anyway, about sociopathy related to eugenics, so many of the ideas related to eugenics have like no basis in ethics outside of eugenics. Like, they go against all sense of human nature, all sense of compassion and decency. And you know, they turn humans into data points on a spreadsheet and nothing more than that, which is a really strange thing to be able to get people to sign on to. But I was reading about eugenics recently because Amanda and I are trying to be more social, and I want to have things to talk about at dinner parties that'll ingratiate me to people. One of the purposes of eugenics was to make humans better and decrease crime because crime is genetic, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's a foundation built on sand. It makes no sense, but they thought it was true. And so they thought, okay, if someone commits a crime, one person suggested, why don't we kill their grandfather? And the logical framework of eugenics is, if your progeny commits crimes, then you will be extremely careful about who you procreate with so that you don't end up having to pay the price for the crimes committed by your children or grandchildren. So, like, within eugenics, that makes sense. You're trying to, you know, nudge people in what eugenicists would see as an ethical direction to improve the human race. But of course, I mean, you hear that and you think, like, well, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard of in my life. But, like, that's a good example of what eugenics does. And so, similarly with long-termism, there was a lot of talk about, okay, so there are, you know, there's like 2 billion people in terrible, crushing poverty in the world. Should we try to help them by giving them money, or should we improve humanity as a whole by actually taking more money away from the impoverished, giving it to the wealthy so that the wealthy can do great things with it for the sake of humanity in the future? And again, that only makes sense in a eugenic framework. And I, you know, it's like, I don't know what it is. Like, it's sort of intoxicating. It's like you get in a whole new framework, and I'm sure the zeal of the converted kicks in, and you know, you think you've learned some like new special information, and you're like willing to follow it to whatever logical conclusion it comes to. And you just don't realize how quickly you lose your way and like sign away your humanity.
until it's your grandfather who's being murdered for your crime.
Yeah, exactly. No, I actually, yeah, thank you. That reminded me, because, you know, a lot of these bad ideas, like all the worst ideas I've ever heard of, I had most of them when I was 10 years old. And so I've always thought, like, why didn't conservatives grow out of any of these? Like,
were you a eugenicist at 10 years old?
Well, I was probably about 10 years old when my older brother told me about AIDS and like what it was and how it worked and how it was, you know, spread and that it was bad. And my answer was like, okay, so why don't we just like quarantine them? Like, why don't we just put them all on an island and not let them leave? And, you know, like maybe I'd heard of leper colonies or something like that at that point. And my brother said, well, but like, what if I had AIDS? I was like, oh shit. Well, that plan doesn't work anymore because now I'm against it. Like, that's all it took. That's all it took for me to decide that we shouldn't quarantine all people with illnesses. Like, it's not actually that complicated, but I don't know, people get in their mental traps. Speaking of those who often start out with like sort of the right concerns and criticisms about society, but then end up wildly wrong in their conclusions. Dion, you wanted to talk to us about the manosphere.
Yeah. So this is, I think people are starting to hear more about it, but it's a little bubbling phenomenon that's been going on, especially in like the YouTube spaces and TikTok, but just groups of guys telling young boys and young men how to be men in what would definitely be described as the most toxic way possible. Like just old school, rigid gender roles. The man is the provider. The woman is the follower. At best, the woman is a follower. Mm-hmm. At worst, she's just a vessel for your seed, which is not too far off from directly what people have said in these mm-hmm. areas. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this constant churn. Like, do you guys remember Gamergate?
No,
yeah. Where, yeah, like just the audacity of a few females to say that maybe that we play video games too, or we could create video games that don't have characters that are just, I don't know, stick figures with boobs, like, but that it never went away, and it's morphed into something new, and I think it's directly related to this, as Joe Biden would call it, semi-fascism that we've got going on in America right now. There's just a whole feeder system designed to make young men think fascist thoughts, and like we always, you know, people always talk about, like, you know, the people that are the young, we got to wait until the older generation dies off and then the newer ideas will take over. But that's not the way anything works. Like, old terrible ideas can be spread just as easily as new better ideas. And the old terrible ideas in this universe of talkers, screamers into YouTube, they have a giant following.
Yeah. I did just see recently a sort of a research project on the radicalization of teenage white boys. It comes from Canada, and it would take us in a totally long, deep direction. So maybe we'll save that for a future episode. But I was glad to see something that was like addressing this as a phenomena on the whole, and like identifying where this kind of content is coming from and what the intentions are, and trying to make people aware of it. Because I think, so when Dion sent all this information over to prepare for this show, I was like, oh God, I try so hard to ignore all of this. And that's probably what a lot of people feel. But the fact is, it's now like so big, we can't ignore it. And maybe we should have been paying attention even sooner. But it's like, I know it exists, but I just don't really want to accept that because it ruins my day. But yeah, it's dangerous and growing at a rapid, rapid pace.
It's so big. Like, I wish I had saved this, but there's a TikTok of a teacher, fifth or sixth grade teacher, talking about how in her class, one of her boys, an 11-year-old, said to a girl, "You're fat. You're a woman, so you don't have to work. I have to work hard for my money." And she said, again, 11. Like, this is being spread to younger and younger boys. And, you know, they don't have any
antibodies,
ideas to, yeah, antibodies. That's the perfect way to describe it. Like, mm-hmm. they're ripe for this virus. That's a good way to describe it.
But is this new?
No.
Because, I would argue that, like, obviously it's been passed down from generation to generation, that we've always had, like, some kind of population that was susceptible to this. And, you know, maybe it looked like talk radio before, and now it looks like podcasts, YouTube. And maybe it's a little more effective because everyone does live in a digital space that even if your parents' beliefs aren't the same, like, you could still be exposed to it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think it's more that people outside that realm are paying attention to it because it is, like, you have to think when someone goes on TikTok and puts out a horrible content video, yes, it's making, you know, teens susceptible, but then you have all the people who react to it. So in reaction, either agreeing with whatever is being said, adding to it, and then circulating that content, and or then doing reaction videos, which lead people back to the original content. So, like, no matter what, it's being spread, like, on a wider surface level.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's certainly not new, but we are living in, like, the perfect environment to fan the flames of terrible things. And so it was always there. And geez, when I was in middle school, boys were saying stupid shit to me, you know, along these lines, but, like, they didn't have a community to turn to, like, reinforce all of this and, like, make it part of their identity. And that's actually what concerns me, because it's so easy. Like, you know, look, it's two sides of the same coin, right? Community is great and community can be wonderful. And then it can also be a community for something like this, which is vile and abhorrent and just, like, entrenches these things even deeper, so that if they do get pushback, which in a normal course of life without digital algorithm onslaught, you might actually, like, change your mind or, you know, have a way to pop out of it. But now it's harder to do that because people are so entrenched and so interested in identifying with a community and an idea of thought. And it's really easy to do that now. Whereas, like, yes, it existed before, but it is much, much easier now. Jay, is it time for my passage from my book that'll blow everyone's minds?
Always.
Okay. So just a tiny bit of context. I'm reading a book called In Defense of Witches, Why Women Are Still on Trial. And I haven't made it very far into this book because it's the kind of book where every page has something so amazing, mind-blowing, puts things in context so well that I have to, like, take a minute. So I'm slowly, slowly making my way through this book. And in this section, she's talking about how we got to witch trials, basically, and mostly framing it from the European witch trials in the 1500s. And there's a lot of talk about the way that the church built up to this view of women being, you know, mysterious creatures in a bad way and, you know, hiding something and being, you know, evil under the surface. And I did find it very interesting that they often compare women to Jews to say that they hide a proud and wayward temperament in which way they resemble Jews, was one of the old school Spanish Franciscan monks' take on it. And so it talks about a period of time leading up to the witch trial, or, you know, kind of a spike in witch trials, in which there was this effort from the churches to disseminate the view that women were to be, you know, questioned, be concerned about, kind of keep them in check. And this just blew my mind. I wonder if others will agree. So in 1593, a German pastor who was somewhat more peaceable than most became alarmed about the little leaflets that peddle in all religions insults against women, the reading of which serves as a pastime for the idle. He felt that by dint of hearing and reading these things, our menfolk have become exasperated with women, and when they learn that one of them had been condemned to perish on the pyre, they cry, "A good thing too!" And basically, the leaflets are YouTube and TikTok, and the idol are the men who are not examining themselves and falling into the traps of these ridiculous messages.
The printing press was the problem.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I hope we don't end up with witch burnings, because I really just can't handle that right now.
I mean, what's the modern day equivalent? Like, women who have been imprisoned for, you know, going through an abortion when like they were having a miscarriage, or, you know what I mean? Like, we could.
And a good thing too, Erin. And a good thing too. Yeah. Celebrating the fact that women are punished for having sexual freedom. Totally. Yeah. So we are already entering that.
And like Erin brought up earlier, we never really left it. We just go through like little waves of progress and then regress, progress, regress. Like, luckily there aren't witch burnings at the moment. Like that's a positive development, right? We're not actually burning women at the stake.
No, we're just
once
imprisoning
again,
them.
Dion, how did you get so optimistic?
You know? I don't think that one was that optimistic.
Like, I really do think Dion and I have traded places, because while he's like, we're not doing that, I'm living my life like it could start at any moment.
Hey, me too.
Okay.
Well, see, Dion's been hearing a lot of Southerners renounce racism, and that's making him feel really optimistic about the direction.
That really does, though, by the way. Just hearing the most stereotypical Southern accent say, racism's bad, here's why. Like, I love it.
I think we actually had this conversation off air, so I'm just going to put in context around it that Dion said his algorithm on TikTok is serving him white people with Southern accents renouncing racism. And so
it's a very particular niche.
Diving in. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a TikTok for everything.
Yeah. As someone who lives in the South, Dion, I hate to bring this to you.
Don't burst his bubble, Erin.
Sticking with the few that were on TikTok. They must be representative of the whole.
That's it for today's free sample. Right, paying members are who make this entire show possible, and so these bonus episodes are really just a fun way to say thanks to them for their support. In addition to these full bonus episodes, members also get bonus clips in every single regular episode, as well as perks in our Discord community. The Discord community is free for anyone to join, but there's a members-only area where recommendations of all kinds are shared, both from listeners and producers of the show. So if you'd like to be our newest member, you can sign up at bestofleft.com/support directly from our Patreon page or from right inside the Apple Podcasts app. And if you can't afford a membership, I offer free financial hardship memberships. Just drop me an email to j@bestofleft.com and we will get you all set up, no questions asked. Or again, to sign up, visit bestofleft.com/support. Thanks for listening.